This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to this special episode, I guess you could say, of the NBA Team Podcast here on PlaceToBeNation.com. And everybody listening for the Place to Be Nation Network, thank you for joining us. I know we took a week off there. Adam was a little bit under the weather, so I'd like to introduce him to make sure everybody knows he's feeling better. It's my co-host, Adam Murray. Are you feeling better?
We're just going to go with the under the weather excuse. Okay. I was in Canada, but we'll say under the weather, sure. But, you know, it's not.
Well, you were under the weather.
No, the voice is back. The voice comes and goes. It's a intriguing subplot here. How is Adam's voice going to be? Am I going to be Pillman? Am I going to be old man? Is it going to be normal? Well, it seems to be normal now. We're back, and this is your time of year, isn't it?
Well, I'm sort of in the bunker at this point. I mean, I can't lie to you. This is sort of the 2 week or 3 week time frame. And with the NBA, it's a shame because, you know, we do an NBA podcast, and this is kind of a critical point for a lot of these teams. And we're paying attention to some of these NBA teams. Lance Stephenson is sort of rescuing the Memphis Grizzlies from being terrible because of injuries, LeBron James and all that. You know, there's scuttlebutt again about Kyrie Irving being unhappy, and the Toronto Raptors are trying to catch up to him. And oh, by the way, the Warriors and Spurs still haven't lost any games lately. So there's some things to talk about with the NBA. I mean, is there anything you want to throw out there before we started on our topic?
No, NBA is still going strong. Cleveland has not looked good at all under Tyronn Lue.
They're still the one seed, though.
Well, by default, because they had already, you know, they're going to be, they have the most talent in the East, so by default, they should be already up there, but they just don't look like they're going to be, you know, the finals is going to look terrible this year. Mm-hmm. It's not, it looks like a four-game sweep with the Warriors or Spurs winning it all. It's going to be disappointing.
But the West Finals is going to be
fascinating. Oh, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be the West Finals.
I think here's the problem, and, you know, we'll get to our main topic in a second, but here's the thing I was thinking about. The interesting part is that I think there's that between the Thunder and the Clippers, one of those teams might find it easier to stay at the four seed so that they can play Memphis because of Memphis's injuries if they stay there, because they'll be an easy out. The problem, though, is if you're a four seed and you win in the first round, guess who you play? You play the Warriors. But Spurs anyway if you're the three seed, so...
Yeah, it's a lose-lose prospect. And the Clippers also already have that, where the road team mentality and... Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need to try as hard in the regular season as we do in the playoffs. But it'll be interesting to see all the jockeying for position. And the bottom of the West just fell out, too, I've noticed. Dallas is on a huge losing streak.
Is it too early to give Fred Hoiberg and Billy Donovan, the college to pro coaches, an F?
Hoiberg's on an F. I think Donovan's on a D-. Okay. I mean, it's really, you know, there's a learning curve, and I think people seem to forget that. They all expect, you remember Brad Stevens, his first year, that team was the most mediocre team there was.
But it was a bad team. That was the difference.
There was a bad team, but it just didn't look like the team was developing anything. It was just like, we're just bad overall, and as opposed to no talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a learning curve. You have these two guys, and also, you know, Westbrook blew a big game. He blew the Spurs game pretty much by letting Green take that open shot.
They blew that game against the Clippers a week ago.
Big time. So you have, it's different than college where you just have these kids. You have egos. You have, well, I'm making my money. You have, you know, Enes Kanter who can't play defense. So it's you know, you're learning new. He had never been in this part. You know, this is all, oh, it's tournament time. Let's just, you know, four games, we're good. No, now it's, well, the season starts now.
So the season starting, we will get back to it probably back next week or, you know, at some point. But what we wanted to do was another special edition, because we did one before, of the NCAA team, because we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the potential prospects that are going to be that and players that people are going to be seeing in the NCAA tournament this upcoming week. I mean, if you rank the sporting events just overall, Super Bowl, even the Olympics, depending on what year it is, the World Cup, where would you put the NCAA tournament? Would you put it above the NBA Finals? Would you put it above the World Series in terms of just the overall entertainment value?
The first week, yes. After the first week, the NCAA tournament really has no value because it's the same. You know, look back. What was the last non-Power 5 conference team to win?
To win the national championship.
Yeah, or even, you know, okay,
probably,
Butler came close.
UNLV won it in 1990 out of the Big West.
Yeah, so it's just the same. You're going to see the UNCs. You're going to have Duke every other year, UCLA a couple years. And it's just the same. Once you get to, like, the Elite Eight and Final Four, there might be one surprise every, you know, few years.
Oh,
but
there's always a surprise, especially Sweet 16. There's always some team that gets hot and wins two games.
Oh, yeah, the Sweet 16. But then, okay, then they get blown out in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same four teams in the final. You're going to have, you know, odds are it'll be Kansas. You'll see the Kentucky, Michigan State, North Carolina, Duke. It'll just be the same schools again. So by the time it all whittles down, it's just, okay, it's the same schools. It's the big ones. But everyone wants to see the 14 beat the 3. They want that, you know, that first weekend of you know, Thursday through Sunday of, oh, there's a game every half hour, and every half hour the game ends. And
because you have 16 games one day and 16 games the next. I mean, it's guaranteed you're going to wind up with at least a handful or maybe even more than a handful of really fun, great games. And even if the games are terrible low scoring-wise, and let's be serious, most of them are, you have incredible finishes because, like you were saying earlier, in college, these kids don't know better. So when you break down all these stats and you do all this research and people look at BPI and Sagarin and all this stuff, and it's fine, but what it is that once you get to the tournament, it changes. Let me give you an example. Iowa State last year, when Fred Hoiberg was there, they had this great offensive efficiency. I mean, their efficiency on offense was just through the roof. They were just this great team. They play UAB as a 3 seed. UAB was a 14 seed. They played the worst game they played all year long, and they're gone. It just takes one game.
It takes one game, and it comes down to coaching. And this is what, you know, as we saw with the demise of LSU, it comes down to coaching, and we have to run sets. We have to be a team. It's not just, okay, it's an AAU game. Go get your points. Go run around. It's all good. Because you watch the games, they're all, well, I need to go drive and try to do a bad layup. And they all miss the layups, and it just becomes like a WNBA game. And that's because there's no sets being run, and, well, we don't know what to do. So, well, I'm the point guard. I'm just going to run head first.
What's the most maddening thing for you watching college basketball, even if it was just this year or just in the past couple of seasons?
This year, the maddening part was just how bad it was. It was hyped up like, oh, we have all these new freshmen coming in, and all the good freshmen, all the NBA prospects, aren't even in the tournament.
Well, there's a few of them, but the main one, and you had to dangle that, and you had to dangle that carrot out there for, you know, both of us as LSU fans, is Ben Simmons out of Australia, who just had a really, really rough time at the end of the season. His numbers across the board were great. He was at like 20 points and 11 rebounds and 6 assists. You know, he was clearly the best player on LSU's team, but boy, LSU just fell off of a cliff in those last 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah, nobody else was playing. It was just him, and then you could just – I was watching him, and just like, it looked like he gave up. When he, you know, the second round of the tournament, like, he got two quick fouls. He's just like, I'm just going to mentally check out, and just never came back, and that's what just –
That loss to Texas A&M was a national embarrassment. It's the kind of loss that can get a coach fired.
It should. It just, the whole season should. You have the best player in college, and you can't even make the tournament.
I hate to be armchair quarterback sometimes, where, you know, one bad game and you say, "Oh, fire him." But that's one game where you're just like, it's sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back type of thing, where we've seen this out of LSU under Johnny Jones, a head coach, for the last couple of seasons. But that game is so bad at such a critical moment that the only choice you almost have, Adam, is to dismiss him.
Well, there's a difference between the armchair quarterback saying, you know, they blew, it was a bad game, and then just, you know, everybody's pretty united in saying, well, he's not getting coached. The coach is the problem. If you get somebody else in there, he can. You know, you have the... You know, we need discussion because the draft is, you know, however many days away. And, Ingram's going to pass him. No, Ingram's is not going to pass Simmons. If Simmons was on Duke, he would be the most, you know, destructive college athlete of all time.
You talk about Brandon Ingram, number 14, the small forward at 6'9" for the Duke Blue Devils. They call him Baby KD with the long arms and the three-point shot. What did you think of him?
I didn't think he was that. He seemed to disappear at times, which seems to be this.
Well, Grayson Allen is the alpha male on that team in more ways than one. He's the star player, and everyone hates him. You know.
Oh, yeah, he's, you know, tripping everybody. But I was just watching Ingram. It's like, well, he tries to, like, I'm just going to use my long arms, quick, you know, long. He looks fragile.
The one point with Durant where the comparison does work is that when he does that little low-hang dribble and he breaks down the baseline, he does remind me a little bit of Durant. But in terms of, like the scoring volume and, you know, the versatility and the ability to get to the rim at will and the ability to make threes. Yeah, he is so raw. I mean,
he tries to go to the rim, and the thing is, oh well, he's a baby KD. No, KD makes the shots because he takes good shot selection. Mm-hmm. Ingram just seems to be like, well, I'm just going to try to jack something up if I can't bowl through. And in the NBA, you're not going to go run into all the, you know, the big men and pull out what you're pulling against, you know, Florida State and Clemson.
I can't call it a 1-2 draft with Simmons and Ingram, because even though Ingram's a nice player, I don't want to say he's that far ahead of the other people behind him. But would you call it a 1-player draft with Ben Simmons, or do you think Simmons has really hurt his stock with his season at LSU?
I think teams are sort of, you know, agents, teams. They're trying to, like, oh, well, we need to, you know, put chinks in his armor to try to, maybe he'll slide to 2 if we don't win the draft. And maybe we could convince the number one guy to take Ingram because he might be a better fit.
Well, it kind of sort of happened last year with D'Angelo Russell. It's like the Lakers kind of talked their way into it. Now, I'm not saying that picking Russell was a mistake, because if you've noticed in the last couple of months, Russell's played well for the Lakers, getting more playing time, while Jahlil Okafor's back on the shelf with the knee injury. So we're not really sure where that's balancing out. We do know that Karl Towns at 1 was a no-brainer now. So.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, there are people trying to say, oh, he's too passive, he doesn't have the heart. And, you know, you're going to try to, if you have enough time, you're going to try to find fault in anybody's game. And you watch Simmons, he was the only one on the team really doing anything. And to have, you know, 22 double-doubles?
But he's not aggressive. He lacks the aggressiveness of an NBA superstar. The ability to get to the free throw line.
Do you need to start off being that alpha?
You don't start that way, but you got to finish that way.
You got to finish that way, and, well, if you're not developing and your team is just sort of, you know, whatever, get through, maybe in the NBA you don't have to come in saying, I'm going to destroy everything. Maybe you take that Andrew Wiggins, I'm going to learn for a bit, and the Carl and the Towns, like, you know, let's be students as opposed to, well, I got the swagger, I'm the best.
Yeah, but
all of a sudden,
you know what's, you know, this, let's go back kind of with the NBA thing, because we're talking about the last two number one picks, you know, the one and doneers, which is Towns and Wiggins, both in Minnesota. Does it seem to you that Towns has sort of taken the alpha male status there, and Wiggins has sort of become a sidekick?
Yeah, is there anything wrong with that? No.
And Wiggins is aggressive. But there, you know, I mean, and I don't just mean that in terms of, like, how he attacks the rim and how he defends people, but in terms of just, like, his leadership and his ability to take over games, like, I feel like Wiggins might be, like, a great number two.
Well, look at this way. Let's look at the Spurs. Is Tim Duncan the alpha number one, you know, type guy? No, you don't have to be the I'm all that, everybody look at me. You could just be the Andre Drummond's another one. He's growing into that beast, but he's, you know, content to be, okay.
He's a timid personality for sure.
Yeah, so yeah. Do you need somebody who's going to be I want this to be my team, or do you want somebody to be like, look, I'm content being a number two. We could be a team and having a little, you know, as opposed to just, you know, Harden versus the world and Westbrook versus the world. Even, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, okay, Westbrook and KD, but it's a lot of times Westbrook versus KD and everyone else on his team.
Well, Ingram's a good transition, because we want to, you know, every time you kind of start with college basketball, as much as any other conference would hate to, or conference fan would hate to admit it, we always kind of start with the ACC. It's the most consistent conference. It's the most publicized conference. And for Duke, we could just start kind of rounding out some of the players that we're going to be watching. Grayson Allen, there's a few rumors there that he might go to the professionals after this one as a sophomore. What say you?
His stock is never going to be higher now.
Okay.
It's such a weak draft, and he is a shooter, which is a commodity now.
I don't know if he can work in the NBA, and I don't mean that just because of the plain fact that he's white. It's just that I don't get a Jimmer Fredette vibe out of Grayson Allen. He is very athletic. He very much is. He won his high school All-American dunk contest. You know, he's got hops, but I just don't know if that ability. He's a player that's kind of glides through the paint. I don't know if he'll be able to do that in the NBA. It'd be really hard. He is a good shooter, though.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, if he works on his D a little more, and, you know, there's going to be a spot for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a weak draft, so you're going to might have a couple more freshmen who will return that would have come out at the beginning of the year. Like, you know, and when we get closer to the draft, we should pull out some of the early, you know, week one mock drafts of all the players.
Yeah.
And see, like, wow, we thought this guy would be good. And, you know, just it's funny. Like, now we're still talking, like, you know, we're not even in the ACC, but you have people saying Cheick Diallo and Labissiere are still going to go pro because people like their intangibles.
Yeah.
And they've done literally nothing.
And Diallo's teammate, Carlton Bragg. And they both, neither of them play, you know?
Yeah, it's like, well, they have size. Well, it's like, well, you know, now it's the NBA has changed where their contracts are so cheap where we could try to develop them ourselves and, you know, maybe find this gem as opposed to getting this, you know, four-year guy who's really not going to do anything for us. But, you know, with just Grace Allen, there's shooters are a commodity. It's a weak draft. He will, you know, he'll be a first-round pick, late, you know, early 20s, late teens. But
yeah,
is he worth it?
Duke was the champion last year. Had the one and done talent with Tyus Jones, Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow. They're all three of those guys are in the NBA now. Allen stayed. They have Ingram, and we'll see how it goes with this season after this. Likely that Ingram's gone after this season. The champion of the conference in terms of the regular season, also the tournament, was North Carolina. Now, North Carolina was a very experienced team. You know, North Carolina, under Roy Williams, they always have these sort of like three-year or four-year like sequences where after by the third year or the fourth year, they really peak and put together like a kind of a prime team. But, you know, in 05, they had NBA talent for sure. You know, Raymond Felton, Sean May had a cup of coffee over there, Marvin Williams. And then in 09, they had the Tyler Hansbrough, Danny Green, Ty Lawson team. That team was unbelievable. And then in 2012, they had Tyler Zeller, Harrison Barnes, even Kendall Marshall played in the NBA. This one, what do you see here with Bryce Johnson, Marcus Page as a senior, Kennedy Meeks, who's a big guy at 6'9", big body, Justin Jackson as a slasher. They're clearly a one seed this season in this tournament, but what say you about their talents?
Oh, as far as college goes, you know, they should be in the Final Four easily.
Their front court is ridiculous.
The seasoning, you know, it's one of those things, okay, you let the freshmen go, and then you build these, you know, guys who learn for 4 years, and you have a very high intelligence team, which is what you don't get with freshmen. Mm-hmm. You don't see the high basketball IQ, but now you see it with Bryce Johnson. But then again, well, you know, from the NBA perspective, do you want Bryce Johnson or do you want a Deonta Davis or we'll say Sabonis for the power forwards?
Demontis Sabonis from Gonzaga and Deonta Davis from Michigan State.
Would you want people who are 2-3 years younger with higher ceilings or do you want somebody, you know, like a couple years ago when Atlanta drafted
In this particular question, I would probably go with Johnson because he's a seasoned guy who played into his role as a big man. He's a true big.
He's a true big, but again, he's now 23, and if you're a team that already has some bigs and you're just going to bury him at the end of the bench, would you want somebody we could bury and develop?
Or the potential guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Years, your guys move out, he can move up.
We know what the GMs do. They go with the potential guy, you know, and we see it every year. That's why freshman bigs always go high. That's why Diamond Stone, another guy we're going to talk about in a little bit, he's definitely going to go high. Probably higher than Bryce Johnson, wouldn't you say?
Diamond Stone's going to go higher than he should be because
I agree with that.
He's raw. This is just – we should just call this the foreign and raw draft because that's all we seem to have.
Who's the most talented player on North Carolina's team? Is it the senior, Johnson, the All-American?
I would go Johnson.
Kennedy Meeks has got a nice wide body, dude. He can score efficiently in the paint.
He can score, but it's not all about scoring. It's about watching, you know, the – like I said, just a high basketball IQ. Johnson doesn't need the ball or be in position in order to set up the guy or, you know, set a nice screen or be in a position for a nice rebound as opposed to just talent or scoring.
Let's look back on Notre Dame last year because they had a really good team. But how talented was their team as you kind of look through like the first year as rookies for Pat Connaughton and Jerian Grant, and now you look at Demetrius Jackson, the point guard, and Zach August, who are the star players on that team. How good would you call them? Like how good was that team?
I would say this year's team just sort of looks like last year's team, just a little watered down.
Okay.
Like with Jerian Grant, I see the same thing now with
he's with the Knicks now.
Well, yeah, but the oh, I'm just blanking on his name. The point guard now for Notre Dame.
Oh, it's Demetrius Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
They look the same player, same style.
Well, they play well together. It was kind of like that McCollum-Lillard type of thing where they were playmakers, but they played together. They played off of each other.
They played off of each other, but just, you know, now that, you know, it's Jackson's team. It's just, I see the same style. It was just like, it's Notre Dame seems becoming a system school is what I'm trying to say.
Jackson, because of the how point guards are getting plucked now in the NBA draft, Jackson will get picked. But what about Zach August? That's 6'10", a little slim, but he averages a double-double in college. He went mano a mano against Karl Towns in the Elite Eight last year, even though defensively he got exposed. What do you think there?
See, I don't know about Jackson getting picked. Like, he's not going to be his stock has really sunk.
6'1" junior.
He's 6'1" junior, but you're going to have like point guards who are going to come out who shouldn't come out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got Tyler Ulis, who's already declared, mm-hmm. which is, like, very strange.
Now, Calipari says that he will go pro. That's what Calipari says. So if you take his word for Bible, then it's going to happen.
That's a strange thing to do in the conference semifinal.
Worries you with Tyler Ulis? Is it the 5'9" frame? Is it he's got a strong body, though, and he's got great dribbling ability.
Well, it's just the 5'9" frame, and I think he's sort of riding the, look, Isaiah Thomas could do it. Why can't, you know, there's nothing wrong with a small guy. It's just, well, yeah, what's going to happen when you go against a 6'4 Chris Dunn and another big, you know, Sean Livingston 6'6", if, you know, how are you going to guard that being, you know, 8 inches shorter?
Virginia is fascinating because if you watch Joe Harris with the Cavaliers, and you don't because he never plays, and then you got Justin Anderson with the Dallas Mavericks, who's chipped in a little bit, but he's obviously still learning. And now their star player and also a first-team All-American had a great year at the guard spot at 6'5" is Malcolm Brogdon. But they don't really have NBA talent. Does that mean that Tony Bennett's just doing a better job of getting more out of his kids? Or do you think it's a system?
I think they're not to the system point yet because they haven't really put anybody through repeatedly. It's just, you just have, every once in a while, there's just a team where it's just a bunch of kids who just play well together and all know their roles. You don't have that one guy who's this is our star, like, again, Chris Dunn in Providence.
Well, this year, Brogdon is sort of the star.
He's sort of, but is he really? Because any given game, somebody else could step up.
Yes, that's true. Anthony Gill, London Perrantes. Yeah,
that's the thing with that team is they've won as a team, which you don't see in these one and done days because you have your two, three guys and then that's it.
I think Brogdon will make it. Is Anthony Gill an NBA player? 6'8", power forward.
No, he's a little step too slow.
Jim Larrañaga's put together a pretty talented team again at Miami. He had a good one in 2013, and the sophomore guard on that team was Shane Larkin, and he went pro after a pretty good year at Miami. This year, you know, Sheldon McClellan was a transfer that was originally at Texas. Jaquan Newton is a 6'2" guard, but he's really good. I don't think Angel Rodriguez, who was the transfer from Kansas State, I don't think he's a pro. Devon Reed's athletic, but he still needs some time. Tony Jaquiri is 7 foot. Do you see any kind of NBA talent here, or do you think just that Jim Larrañaga just knows how to get a lot out of his guys?
It's just good recruiting. The only one who really has any sort of – he had buzz earlier was McClellan.
McClellan. 6'5", but he can play small forward.
Yeah, but he's just – again, those guys are a dime a dozen. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Is, you know, well, oh, good, you're a 6'5" shooting guard. Well, who isn't that you could, you know – He's one of those going to be European superstars who might, you know, come in a few years. But it's just, again, you don't have the size. You're just nothing special. You're a 6'5" guy. Okay. But you're a senior now. So what differs you from the other 6'5" guys?
I think they can go far. But I don't know if they'll go farther than the 2013 team. That one, they won the ACC regular season and the tournament. They went to the Sweet 16 and lost to Marquette. I don't know if they'll go farther than that. Michael Young and Jamel Artis at Pittsburgh, clearly the two best players on that Jamie Dixon coach team. But I'm not a huge fan of Pittsburgh's players. I never really was.
No, Pittsburgh is like...
That's a system.
That I was gonna say it's a system, but they're sort of like Villanova West is where we get the same guys in every year. Every year we're good. Every year we wind up choking at the end, and you don't see really much from them.
Let's move over to the Big 12. Now you talked about Chick Diallo. He's averaging like 4 points and under 3 rebounds for Kansas.
He's averaging 4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. And Carlton Bragg isn't far behind, but they're still somehow on Chad Ford's like top 50 or whatever. Brandon Green is a junior, but he's had some sort of issues with like getting along with Bill Self, but he does shoot 53% from the 3-point line. Would that be enough to go pro? Just that?
No, you could try that, but it's not.
Everybody wants 3-point shooters now.
Everybody wants 3-point shooters, but if he, you know, another year, he could vault himself into the lottery.
The one that's interesting is Devontae Graham, because when you watch him, he's a 6'2" guard. He doesn't look impressive, but I watched him against Oklahoma, not the one that went to triple overtime, that classic game. It was a month later, and he outplayed Buddy Hield straight up. Like, he guarded him, and Buddy Hield guarded Devontae, and Devontae outplayed him. And he's a really, really good shooter. I know Frank Mason's not a pro. He's too short. He's 5'11". Wayne Selden Jr., though, definitely a pro.
It's Selden and Ellis. They'll be second-round picks.
I don't know if Perry Ellis is a pro.
He'll be one of those. He's a 50th pick. He'll be there for a year or two. He'll get some garbage minutes. He's a scrappy player. Will he last in the NBA? Probably not, but he'll be drafted and he'll make a team.
What did Perry Ellis mean to Kansas? Now, there's a million jokes about how long he's been at Kansas because he looks old, but what did he mean to Kansas?
Well, he basically, he's just, I was just the age thing. I was going to say the team, it was his team, but I think he sort of lost that to Selden and... This is Selden time now. He's on fire.
Did you see the dunk he got in the Big 12 tournament on Baylor?
Yep.
Big time dunk. I mean, I saw this against Kentucky about a month ago when they had that SEC Big 12 challenge in the middle, like in February, which was strange. But it was kind of fun to watch non-conference basketball that late in the season. And they had a great game that went to overtime, and Selden took over that game. We got to talk about Buddy Hield. He's probably going to win the Wooden Award, the Naismith Award. If it's not him, it's going to be Denzel Valentine at Michigan State. 26 points. He averaged 4 made threes a game. He shoots almost 50% from the 3-point line, automatic at the free throw line. Super efficient offensive player. Defensively, he's got some holes, and he's only 6'4". But what do you see for Buddy Hield? Do you think this guy is going to be an absolute pro, or do you think he's going to struggle?
Well, somebody's going to draft. He's
like, is he a lottery guy?
He's going to be a lottery guy. He's going to be a high lottery guy. He's going to be not high lottery. He'll be like six.
Is the shooting alone going to do it for him?
And then he doesn't have. I don't see him. People are like, oh well, he's James Harden because of his shooting, but he's not that good. I don't see. He doesn't have the size. He doesn't play defense. He's certainly not, going to bully anybody around.
Do you think he's been exposed by the fact that his teammates haven't really picked him up in the last month or so?
Sort of. He's sort of sputtered.
I don't see pros here with, Isaiah Cousins and Jordan Woodard. Cousins has long arms, but I don't know if he'll make it as a point guard. Ryan Spangler, not really. Kadeem Latin, the big man shot blocker, not really. I don't really know how good that team really is. I know they can shoot threes because that's all they do.
Yeah, he is the team, but I just don't see he has average size, and then he's not going to be lights out at the NBA because they're much faster than they are playing TCU.
I think he'd be a great fit in Phoenix alongside Devin Booker. It would give you two automatic 3-point shooters.
Well, along with all their other point guards they have now.
Yeah, but Brandon Knight is. They're stuck with them. Let's move on to Iowa State. This is the first year without Fred Hoiberg. The head coach now is Steve Prohm. He used to coach at Murray State. At Murray State, he had coached Isaiah Cannon and Cameron Payne. So now he's at Iowa State. They left a lot there, though. So they had George Niang, who was a senior. Abdul Nader, who was a pretty good player who transferred. Jameel McKay averages almost 10 rebounds a game. Monte Morris has one of the best assist-to-turnover ratios in the country as a point guard at 6'3". I'm going to tell you, though, I don't think any of these players, except for maybe Jameel McKay, is going to wind up in the NBA.
I don't see anybody, period.
Not even Niang?
No.
I think Niang's a little too short for the power forward scoring role. Like, he's not a Draymond Green type for me. Like, I don't – he's a little too slow for my liking. I don't know if – I don't know how good he is off the dribble. And they're going to force him off the dribble if you're going to play a power forward now in the NBA because you got to move.
Yeah, and no, like I said, there's just college teams who just have good college players. Like, we already mentioned that with Pittsburgh. Here's another one. These are all Hoiberg kids still. And there's nobody really, anybody who's going to do anything on the next level. But you don't need to when all you can do is, you know, good now.
Did Iowa State take a step back with Hoiberg gone, or do you think they're about as good as they could have been the next year anyway?
Well, I think they would have been, whoever was coaching them, this is as much as you could probably get from them.
Baylor, Rico Gathers is 6'8" and 275 pounds, averaging a double-double. Do you think he can make it because of the fact that the center position is shrinking so much? I mean, he'll probably wind up on some D-League rosters every now and then, right?
Yeah, he'll be on the summer league rosters and too, but the only one, no, Baylor's just a team, they've lost all their real recruits they've had, you know, they're one and done freshmen who've done nothing in the NBA.
Well, and not only that, they lost, you know, after losing Brady Heslip and Pierre Jackson, they haven't been able to replace those guards. Those were really, really good guards that they had.
No, the only one now is really, you know, Taurean Prince. But
well, Prince is like a point forward. I really like Taurean Prince, you know.
But again, he's a senior, so, you know, damaged goods.
Do you think he'll be a first-round pick?
No.
6'7" small forward. I think
you could say that, but don't forget this is going to be a year to see a lot of foreign names coming in at the end of the first.
Okay. Actually, you know what? Let's throw that out for a second because we got two main ones there. Dragan Bender. Have you seen him yet?
Only the highlights yet. I haven't seen a full game.
He's at Maccabi Tel Aviv right now, I believe.
Yeah, he's going to be number three, and the other one, Furkan.
Furkan Korkmaz.
Furkan Korkmaz. Yeah, her F is.
Watch your mouth.
And you then, know, they're the two high ones.
And then there's Tim, and then there's Luau, but we talked about Luau last year, you know, when he was from France, I believe, and he decided to come back.
There's like three Frenchmen who are going to go at the bottom of the first round. And, you know, thanks to the, I don't want to say resurgence, but Denver has sort of revived the Europeans.
Mm-hmm. With Nikola Jokic and
Jokic, Nurkic, LaVert, and Axel Toupain, they signed from the Raptors D League, who's been getting minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, well, you could get somebody who's, you know, it's a very weak NBA, weak college draft, so why not get somebody who might do something from international?
Let's look at Bob Huggins' little kamikaze squad in West Virginia, where they steal the ball constantly. They call them Press Virginia. Any pros here, or is that just a gimmicky type of team? Devin Williams is their big man at 6'9".
It's a gimmicky team, and they've always been a gimmicky team, and it's just a Bob Huggins team.
But there's one thing Devin Williams has going for him. He wears goggles.
He has the goggles. And
it just seems to me like players who wear goggles get more attention, and scouts watch them more.
The Big 12 finals where he had 31 points.
Yeah, he had a really nice game. Really, really nice
game. That's the game you want to go in on, and, you know, he's hot right now. But, again, you're just... You know, you're 6'9" center who can rebound. Okay, every team has one, but
I think the goal for West Virginia is to not do what happened against Kentucky, where they got doubled up.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to happen for sure this year. I think the final score there was like 76-38. You know, but that was a lamb to slaughter there. Just keep your mouth shut if you play a big time team and you say you're going to beat them. That's all I have to say about that. Texas, Isaiah Taylor's a junior. He'd be an idiot if he came out. He's 6'1". He's not the greatest ball handler. He can attack the rim, but He's got a lot of ways to go. Cameron Ridley's coming off of a foot injury, and he averaged 10 rebounds and 3 blocks.
Yeah, they're all best off staying within, you know, you have Shaka Smart down there, so he's known for overachieving. Your best learn.
Did Marcus Smart post-mortem wind up getting Travis Ford fired because of the fact that him being so good sort of accelerated the expectations there?
No. It's just sort of, I think, a matter of impatience. And it wasn't Marcus Smart. They've had, I think they had another prospect or two a few years ago.
They had LeBron Nash.
Yeah, they had
James Anderson. Yeah,
Jameson Curry.
Yeah, James On.
Might be 2-4.
His name is actually James On.
James On.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember.
No, it's just, the other thing, especially if they're too high, it's just you see every other team around you getting better, and you just fall further and further down the rankings. And, you know, Oklahoma State's not one of those schools we could accept that we were 8th place in the Big 12.
Well, the thing is, the Kansas wins it every year, but I don't know how much pro talent does Kansas really have. Like, I think it's just Seldon, maybe Ellis, like we were saying.
Well, that's just this year, but every year they're number one. And, you know, I think it's a fact that Oklahoma is good again with Buddy Hield. You can't take that.
And I really do feel like it's almost like in the older days when the golfers were scared of Tiger on the leaderboard. I think there's a bit of like a scare factor there with Kansas, where teams just don't. They cast a spell on the other teams in the Big 12. In the tournament, though, that changes. You know, teams aren't scared of Kansas. Like, they look forward to playing Kansas. They want to beat them, you know?
Well, yeah, because a tournament, you're not playing at Allen Fieldhouse.
Well, it's not just that. It's also on more of an even field or an even keel. You're not playing at, like you said, you're not playing at Allen Fieldhouse. But also, the calls aren't going to go your way all the time.
No, and you know, like you said, you always want to play against the best competition. It's hard to get yourself psyched up for TCU. You know, you want to, you know, oh man, I'm so good, I'm the best. Well, you go quite, you know, you got to beat the top teams. And Kansas is always the number. You know, they're always at that specter, always hanging over the Big 12. Yeah, this is ours.
When we talk about the Big East Conference, most of the time we're not really that heavy on the NBA talent. And it's no disrespect to that conference. It's just the fact that since they kind of realigned it after the breakup of the original Big East with the Catholic 7 schools, and then they added Butler and Xavier and Creighton, it just didn't feel like they had too much NBA talent there. You know, I know they've had a couple of them come through, like Doug McDermott, Bryce Cotton. Last year, Darren Hilliard got drafted out of Villanova. But this year, it seems like they have a little bit more punch this year. Let's start with Villanova, who won the regular season championship. I think Josh Hart is absolutely going to make it in the NBA.
Oh, you were always more higher on Villanova than I am. I you know, I always say they're always, you know, 6 shooting guards and
4 out, 1 in.
Yeah, and it's just the same. They're just a system school, and every year
is it fair to call them a finesse school or a finesse team?
It's fair.
Archer Diacono, definitely not, right? I just don't see him in the NBA.
I don't see really any of them in the NBA. Even, you know, last year, Darren Hilliard, I was sort of shocked by that. And
I think Chris Jenkins can make it because of his shooting. He's really, really good 3-point shooter, along with Josh Hart. But Josh Hart's got the intangibles. He can play defense. He can rebound at the small forward spot. He's got more than just one tool in his belt. Chris Jenkins is just a great shooter. You know, and Jalen Brunson, kind of disappointing.
Yeah, he was supposed to be that, you know, we got a superstar finally and didn't really do too much.
The one thing I can't stand, and Villanova egregiously, like, commits this, is how everybody wants to wear elbow sleeves. Now, in the NBA, I don't care about that because everybody thinks they're the star. But I've been always under the assumption that only the best players can wear the elbow sleeves on the team. Everyone on Villanova's team wears fucking elbow sleeves.
If that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do.
I mean, is there a theory here about the elbow sleeves and why the top players wear them but the scrubs don't?
I don't have a clue.
I think maybe there's some magic in there. Or maybe it's a rite of passage. Like, when you become the best player, you get the elbow sleeve.
I don't. Again, Villanova's a weird... They're in their own little world. And
you want to talk about Chris Dunn?
Okay, let's talk about them.
That's going to start topping off kind of the lottery, who's going where and who's going in front of whom type of thing. Because Chris Dunn had a terrific year at Providence as a junior. Another guy who also had a great year at Providence alongside him was the big man Ben Bentel at 6'9". We'll see about Bentel. He's a sophomore. He's got options there. We'll see how much better Dunn made him. But then again, I saw games without Dunn where Bentel played well. But let's start with Dunn. What ceiling do you see here with Dunn? Like people, a lot of people compare him to John Wall because he's sort of he's got that kind of game where he just kind of dribbles all over the place. He doesn't have much of a jump shot yet, but defensively he's really, really good. He averaged 3 steals a game. But what do you see here with Dunn?
I don't know.
Is he the first star taken?
He's going to be the first point guard taken, but by really default, because who's really the next one who's going to be taken? It's a long way down.
The next one would be DeJounte Murray.
Yeah, DeJounte Murray. And yeah. He shouldn't come out. He has no shot. He's not a true point guard either.
Mm-hmm.
He's really just another.
And I know Jamal Murray's there, but you and I are in agreement. He's a shooting guard.
He's a two.
If you watch him, I don't know if you've been watching the SEC tournament or Kentucky the last few weeks, but you know we'll get to them in a second. But that man, off ball screens, that dude is a fucking killer.
He reminds me of Richard Hamilton.
You think he'll be a steal if he goes kind of like in below the top five?
To New Orleans to replace Eric Gordon.
anybody.
It depends where he goes. He could be brutally horrible on the wrong team, I think.
And remember, he's from Canada, so he's got that going for him too.
You know, but, he's Canadian. Back to Chris Dunn.
Uh huh.
He sort of cooled down the past month or so as Providence really, weren't they like a top five team in the country? And now
I think they were on the top 10 for a little while.
And then
they dropped a few games. They lost to DePaul, which is a bad, bad loss, you know, and they lost in the semis to Villanova in the Big East tournament. We'll see how they do in the real one. Dunn did not play well in the tournament last year against Dayton. That was one of the motivations for him coming back. He didn't want to go out on that note. So, and I think he helped himself by coming back to school.
Well, he didn't want to go out because there were already like 8 point guards going in the first round. Now there's, you know, he's the only one. Mm-hmm. You know, by far, he's the best point guard in the draft, but we've already said how horrible the draft is.
But is he like an eye-popping type of prospect?
No, I don't see him as an eye-popping type of prospect, and I don't see him being one of those immediate rookie help in the NBA as, you know, a point guard-hungry team will draft him in you know, the top five, and he will be a contributor.
What about Bentel? A 6'9" big man who can shoot threes. Big, strong body. Decent rebounder.
That's the problem, is he's not really a strong rebounder. And
well, he's had 8 rebounds a game in college, which is good.
He's rising up the boards, but he would be much better to go back.
I agree with that. I don't. If he went pro the same year as Dunn going pro, a lot of people would have questions of, well, how good really was he without him? Like, that's going to be the question. I think he needs that year without him to prove how good he really is.
Yeah, you have that, and then, like I said, you're going to be compared against, you know, Sheik Diallo, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's like, well, but he produced at Providence, but, well, he has potential. And then it's going to be, well, how'd you do against Ellison? Well, Ellison, you know, seemed to run around you, and you have, you know, other players of his size. Well, what are you going to do against, you know, Diamond Stone? And his game will be, I think, sort of picked apart more than it should be, but
Xavier's got one of their best teams in a pretty long time. They've always had decent teams, some NBA talent. Remember, Jordan Crawford was there. Derrick Brown was there. This year, you know, I think they have 2 potential NBA guys at the guard spot, Edmund Sumner and Trayvon Blewett. Have you seen either of them?
Sumner, you're high on, and he's
He reminds me of Deion Waiters, and I don't mean that as a in a bad way. He's like an attacking guard who can dish it a little bit.
You don't mean that in a bad way. Like, come on, nobody compares anybody to Deion Waiters.
Well, in terms of like his energy, his ability to attack.
Yeah, you were like he has sort of come out of nowhere too, and I think it's just sort of leads. You know, it's a very bad point guard class in general. in this year, so he's riding up probably faster than he should.
And what about Blewett? 6'6", can play point guard, but he's more of a scorer.
He's more of a scorer, but he's not as dominant as he should be. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't know what he wants to be yet. It's like, well, I can play point, but I can play small forward, and he...
Does Xavier make the Final Four this year?
No.
They never do, but this year they got a pretty loaded team.
No, they're going to run into, like, a Michigan State or a very senior-laden team. And
what about the star of the Big East tournament, it turned out, Isaiah Whitehead at Seton Hall?
Nothing. It is always one player every year who, you know, takes his team, you know, where they shouldn't, you know, you don't expect him to. Mm-hmm. But he is zero NBA.
You really believe that with Isaiah Whitehead?
He had all the, you know, he had the flair coming in, and what have we talked about him before this tournament?
Yeah.
That's the thing. He had one good week.
Well, he's got that Brooklyn reputation, too, because he played high school in New York, you know, and he's a 6'4" guard, so you get a lot of hype there. 16 points, almost 5 assists. He looked very good for Kevin Willard in that tournament. We'll see how he does in the NCAAs. Butler, don't really see much here. Roosevelt Jones, maybe, but he's so undersized. Like, at 6'4", and he's not a guard. He's more of a forward, so we'll see there. Henry Ellenson, should he go pro?
He will, should he? He's not that good.
I don't know.
You were high in him the first week when they played LSU.
He's a perfect stretch four or stretch five. I mean, he reminds me of Channing Frye in a way.
But he's not that good. That's the problem.
You're convinced of this.
he's a stretch five, yeah, but he's soft and he doesn't rebound. He's not, you know, that's the way the NBA is going. He's going to be drafted in the lottery. But, you know, it's one of those you sort of have to go because your stock's high, but should you go? No.
And I'm just making a bold prediction that nobody in St. John's is getting drafted.
No.
They were god-awful this year. The Big Ten, this year, I know the conference champion in the regular season was Indiana, but the best team in that conference was Michigan State. The top player on that team was Denzel Valentine, senior point guard, is 6'5". Unbelievable year. He averaged 18 points, over seven rebounds, seven assists. He's a good three-point shooter. He's the leader of a really good team, the most efficient offense in the country. In the NBA, though, what do you see him?
That's the Izzo teams is just, you know, very, you know, you have your senior led, and all of a sudden, you know, they're the middle of the pack in the beginning of the year, and all of a sudden towards March they get better and better and better. I see a solid high IQ prospect. Mm-hmm. He's not getting sort of Deonta Davis is the he's sort of the NBA.
Well, he's a 6'10" power forward, and who can
that's
block
the
shots.
One the NBA guys are sort of yeah. going
a shot going blocker over. At 6'10" with a nimble frame. They like that a lot. Yeah. So I can't really doubt him for wanting Davis, but Valentine still. I mean, some people would say maybe that you got the most out of him in college, but I think there's still potential. Also, Bryn Forbes is a senior, and he is a really good 3-point shooter. He had 11 threes in one game against Rutgers.
Yeah, but that's just a 2-man as far as NBA prospects go. Davis will probably come out.
Yeah,
and
the rest of them, Aaron Harris, Matt Costello, Gavin Schilling, I don't really see it.
The problem is we can say we like Valentine. We both like Valentine.
He's fun to watch.
What's going to happen in the NBA is just going to be buried at the end of the bench, and, you know, he'll be drafted in the late 20s, the mid-20s, to some playoff team, and he's not going to be he's not going to get playing time, and he'll be cut after 3 years. And
well, here's the problem. I don't know if he can play point guard in the NBA just because of the fact that I don't know if that would be the ideal position for him. He might be better off almost as a point forward.
No, he's not better off playing a point guard. He's just sort of better just being that run-around energy guy.
Can you see him at 6'5", maybe playing small forward, being a bit of a facilitator?
That second unit.
Like a Kyle Anderson type of guy, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see that, but you know, he's that team is his.
Now,
and,
let's talk about one of the more interesting teams in terms of talent, because I think they got a lot of it, and that's Maryland, coached by Mark Turgeon. They had high expectations going in because of the entry of Diamond Stone, the fact that Melo Trimble had a really good freshman year. They brought in Rashid Suleiman, who was a transfer from Duke after he got dismissed from the team. But I'm going to tell you this. I think that starting five they have of Trimble, Robert Carter Jr., who transferred from Georgia Tech, Diamond Stone, Jake Layman, and Suleiman, that's a really talented team. Trimble kind of angers people because he has really...
He's terrible.
Well, he has really inefficient games, but then in the last 5 minutes of the game, he'll just take over.
He'll take over, but he's not a point guard. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. He makes very bad decisions on the court. And
that's true.
The problem with Maryland is I wanted to like him until I saw the Wisconsin game, and when Wisconsin destroyed them, there's your blueprint.
Yeah.
And everybody's been sort of, they haven't been the same team since.
Now, Diamond Stone had a couple big games. He had one, I think he had a 38-point game against Penn State. He looked really good against Michigan State in that Big Ten tournament. But what do you see with Diamond Stone? I know a lot of
people, don't want to.
He's going to get inflated stock for sure, but what do you see?
I don't want to say it, but don't boo me, please. He's rough. Mm-hmm. He needs to be a little more polished. He's going to go pro. He reminds me of Perk.
Okay.
Because Perk didn't, he was unrefined when he came in. He didn't really know what he was doing. And then he developed into a beast and sort of that, they got that mean streak.
Well, he's got the little hook shot, the little turn. He's got the back to the basket game and the turnaround hook shot, which is not easy to teach. So, but people didn't know they had that, Diamond Stone had that until we got into conference play and they started feeding him the ball more. Robert Carter Jr. at 6'9", I like, because he can play small forward and he can make threes. I think he's going to wind up in the NBA.
The problem is with him, he's the third, you know, the third option on a two man team, and then yeah. How much did, you know, Stone being there move the defense from you? How did, you know, Trimble, his scoring, you know, facilitate you? And then once you start getting that third player down, really how good are you and how much is the other guys making you better?
When it comes down to it in the tournament, you know, it's just for the people to get bracket tips. Bracket tips from Adam Murray here. If you have the talented team versus the experienced team, which team are you going with?
The experienced team.
Every single time?
9 times out of 10.
Okay. So, like, for example, with Maryland, you think they'll be in trouble the moment they play a deep, experienced team with some talent?
Pretty much. And this is why I keep going back and forth on Kentucky, because they're the talented team. It's just they look terrible every time they play.
Let's finish up the Big Ten really quickly. A.J. Hammonds, Isaac Haas, Caleb Swanigan, all big guys at Purdue. Are all of them going to be in the NBA?
So the one guy from Purdue you didn't mention I like is Hammonds.
That's what I said, A.J. Hammonds.
Oh,
I said that at the top. I probably said it too quickly. But Isaac.
Okay, I missed that one. I'm like, you didn't say Hammonds. You mentioned the other ones.
You like A.J. Hammonds?
He sort of has come out of nowhere.
But he's a bit of an enigma. He's got a really weird personality. You know, he's been suspended a couple of times. He wasn't always aggressive until his senior year.
Yeah, he didn't really.
His senior year, though, he's been really, really good.
Yeah, he didn't decide to show up till the end.
I know the games you're talking about, because I saw the same ones where there were games where they would literally feed him inside and literally no one could guard him. He would dunk all over them, literally 3 times in a row.
Yeah, and he has the size. He's not. You know, he's legit. He's a legit big guy.
He's not a fat boy. Yeah.
Well, he's not. He's not. You know, he's not that. But he's not also like the, you know, Ellison. You know, he's 7. You know, 6'10", 6'11", 220. No, he's a big 7 foot. You know, probably 250, 260.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously that limits mobility, but he's. I think he's going to do something in the NBA.
Isaac Haas is taller than him. I just don't see it. He's too stationary. He doesn't rebound well. Caleb Swanigan at 6'9". He was a McDonald's All-American. He actually originally committed to Michigan State, then he decommitted and went to Purdue. He's got some talent, too.
He needs another. Is he a senior? No, he's not a senior.
He's a freshman. He's a freshman.
I'm getting all the. You've given me so many names, and I'm just. I've actually kept up with you for most of it, which I think I'm a little more impressed.
It's hard for me with the college news because you know me.
When it was college, you just go so fast and you're bouncing all over the place. And usually, like, you're like, okay, second conversation. I'm like, oh, I'm done. you've mentioned too many names. I can handle about 20, but no, I've kept up. He's, you know, again with the Purdue, it's they're best going back.
It's probably, I don't know, is it Matt Painter's best team or is the Robbie Hummel, Etwan Moore, Juwan Johnson team? Was that one better?
They were better.
Then Hummel had the injuries.
Well, Hummel was just a walking injury every...
Yeah, he was actually doing the Big Ten Network this week because he was injured after playing overseas. I'm not even making a...
Oh, who else was... No, Tony Delk was the SEC... Network guy.
Yeah, there was Tony Delk, Barry Booker. I remember that was a blast from the past when I saw him. There's a couple of funny. Remember Corey Alexander from Virginia?
Yep.
He's calling games for the U now. Is Yogi Ferrell going to play in the NBA at 6'1"?
No.
I don't think so either. But man, he was a good player in the college. Now, Thomas Bryant's the one that they like. He shoots 69%, 6'10", you know, high school, All-American type of guy. Do you think he's probably better off staying one more year?
Well, you know, by the Indiana defaults of your one-and-dones of Vonleh and Zeller, and, you know, he's been a complete failure. He hasn't dominated, you know, he's not that one-and-done Indiana freshman big guy that they've had for the past few years. He is going to come back because he has... I don't see really anything from him at this point. He needs to develop. He needs to develop something a little more than just his size.
If he develops the 3-point shot that I saw late in the regular season, then he'll be a really nice prospect. But I agree with you. I think one more year for him would be good. The team that sort of trended upward was Oregon. Now, Oregon has a couple of decent talents: Elgin Cook, Dylan Brooks, Tyler Dorsey. They're all kind of between 6'4" and 6'6", and they're all versatile, and I like them. But the one that came out of nowhere, Adam, was Chris Boucher out of Montreal. That guy, I think he is absolutely going to make it in the NBA. He's skinny, but he's 6'10". He's got an amazing story about how he came basically from nothing, and he was playing at a junior college in New Mexico, and they discovered him, and he averages 3 blocks a game now. Have you checked out Boucher yet?
It's really hard to watch the Pac-12.
Ducks. Well, the Oregon Ducks or the Pac-12 in general?
Just the Pac-12 in general, because...
I'll tell you why. The Pac-12 network is terrible.
I don't even think I get the Pac-12 network.
Nobody does. There was literally like half the country couldn't watch the Pac-12 tournament because the providers didn't carry it. It was embarrassing.
I thought it was just on like, you know, CBS Sports or some.
No, I think it's like an offshoot of the Fox Sports affiliates. Because if you look at the graphics and you look at the some of the announced teams, it's all kind of Fox talents. Like, like the Big Ten, like you can tell the Big Ten Network is a Fox driven affiliate. Like Jim Jackson is on there, Mike DeCourcy's on there, and you see him on Fox all the time. You know what I'm saying? So you can put two and two together. But the Pac-12 Network is just a mess. It's literally like if you and me try to run a network.
Yeah, and also again, and
I'm not saying that as an insult. I'm saying like we can't run a network.
We could, but.
It would be a terrible
network. It's the time zone thing that also kills them is by the time, you know, all of your games are starting at 11 and the tournament I was watching, you know, I was keeping the box score up and watch the ticker and, you know, games at 1:30, they're still like halfway through the second. It's just like,
The two semi games went to in the conference finals or the conference tournament went to double overtime, or both of them went to overtime. And I don't think they finished the second game until like about maybe like 2:00 in the morning Eastern time.
Yeah, and that's the thing is nobody's up there watching it. And the thing about Boucher is just, you know, you told me to watch him, and okay, I put up a few clips. I haven't, you know, again, like I said, Pac-12, I'm sort of lost on, but he is just a skinny, tiny person.
Well, he's trying to get another year of eligibility because the NCAA originally considered one of his years at at junior college as a full season. So he's trying to get an exemption so he could play, get an extra year of eligibility. If not, he'll be a senior and he'll go to the NBA. But I think he might get into the second round. I don't know if he'll be a first-round talent, but he's really, really good.
Well, as we've seen with the second round every year, it just takes...
He's my breakout star of the tournament. I'll probably go as far as to say that.
Oh, I don't see Pac-12 every year always chokes.
True. We'll see with Oregon. They're going to get a high seed, a really high
seed. You know, all the talent Arizona has every year choke. And...
This Arizona team I'm not high on, though. Ryan Anderson, Gabe York, Alonzo Trier, Caleb Tarjewski as a senior. Not the best Arizona team coached by Sean Miller this year.
Well, Tarjewski every year is like, well, this will be the year he goes pro. This is the year he's going to step it up. And every year it just gets worse and worse.
I'll tell you what happened. He got his lunch eaten by Frank Kaminsky 2 years in a row, and the scouts watched that and said, you see, this guy can't play in the NBA yet. And so he went back to school because his stock was trash, you know?
Yeah, and every year his stock just gets lower and lower. And
pretty much.
He starts off as the, you know, the end of the first round. By the end, it's just, nope, he's off the big board altogether.
What about Jakob Poeltl, coached by Larry Krystkowiak out there in Utah?
I like him.
Like, 7 foot... Nice moves. He's got a turnaround. He uses the glass well. Reminds me a bit of Duncan. He's got that little bit of a kind of herky-jerky motion that Duncan had.
Yeah, he's a player who I don't know how he ended up at Utah of all places, but...
They were the one team that recruited him because he was in Austria. Nobody watched him.
Yeah, but again, you know, always, you know, it's a Utah of all places and, you know...
Gary Payton II, or Gary Payton Jr., whatever they're calling him now. He had a really, really good year at Oregon State. He's going to bring him to the tournament for the first time in, like, since 1990 when his dad did it. So, but how good can he really be in the NBA?
Oh, not very good at all. It's just, I've actually seen a few Oregon State games. It's just like, well, he's had a good year, but he's sort of had an average year, but we're not
good,
talking
defensive
about...
Defensive player. Obviously, it's in the
Jets. Oh, yeah. But he's not – he's just average. He's not – you know, it's – like I said, the point guard class is so bad, he's risen up the charts by default.
Okay, let's talk about the Baby Bears at Cal. Now, one of them is a senior in Tyrone Wallace at 6'5". But the ones that we want to focus on here are Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rabb because they're the ones that are being talked about in the lottery. Have you seen improvement out of those two?
No, but I've seen Jaylen Brown, his stock is through the roof right now because people want the wings.
Well, they want an attacking wing, and that's what he is.
Yeah, and is he shown anything? No, not really. Ivan Rabb, you know, I've his game. I still like him, but other people,
I'm skittish on Ivan Rabb. I know he can rebound for sure. He's got a high field goal percentage, which means he doesn't take any shots that he knows he can't take. But, you know, a lot of people try to make the Aaron Gordon comparison because he was sort of like a long arm type of guy who played in the West Coast. But I don't see it there with Ivan Rabb. He's more of a lethargic type of big man. I think playing one more year in college would really help him. But I don't know if that's going to happen with the way that he's being projected.
Well, the thing is, he's like the NBA has sort of changed, and he's still that old school player, mm-hmm. and which you know I still like, and I still think there's a place for it. But you know, he hasn't developed really anything mm-hmm. offensively, other than just well, I'm just going to sit and just dunk and do layups and land the hook shot, but.
Yeah, he's not – he's like the polar opposite in terms of aggressiveness compared to Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown gets after it. That's the one thing I like about him. Tyrone Wallace is a bit of a killer too. Now, at 6'5", as a shooting guard, he's definitely got potential to be drafted. But I think he's being projected too high.
Yeah, but again, we mentioned, you know, the team is two freshmen, no experience. What's going to happen when they hit a team who's much smarter than they are?
Is this a team, though, that could do – that could help their draft stock if they go farther in the tournament?
Oh, of course. If these two guys have – well, their draft stocks are already high. They're still going to go both in the lottery.
How much help does an NCAA tournament performance do for a player? I mean, we saw with R.J. Hunter last year. We saw with Wally Szczerbiak. We even saw, in a way, with Steph Curry. I mean, do you see the same thing?
Well – in the smaller school guys, definitely it gets you in there because it gets your name on the radar, but it could sink you more than it could help you for these big name guys.
Oh, absolutely.
You have a big, you know, you have big games, all of a sudden, okay, now you've solidified, you've moved up, you know, you've moved up basically from like a 10 to a 6.
Was it a disappointment that Washington didn't make it, or were they just too young between DeJounte Murray and then the senior Andrew Andrews?
They weren't good. Is it a disappointment? Mm-hmm. No, not if you're not good. That's the thing. There's only so much you can do with DeJounte Murray. He's makes terrible point guard decisions. He has no shot. He's just, you know, he has the energy, and he shouldn't come out. He would be, you know, a year, and if he tries to develop a shot, he could be, you know, a top pick next
year. He's an NBA player, though.
He is, but it would be a disservice for him to come out now and go in the 20s as opposed to next year where you can easily go possibly top 5, top 10, depending upon next year's freshman class.
If he and Chris came back, they could really carry Washington to something great next year.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
We've exhausted Ben Simmons, so when we talk about the SC, we could just talk about some of these other teams, because I'm done with Ben Simmons because LSU depresses me. South Carolina, I know that they're a bubble team here. I don't know if they have any NBA players at all. I think Frank Martin's just a smart coach. Vanderbilt is just – it's always a team that is perceived to be underachieving. You know, they seem to have players that people talk about might make the NBA, but I don't know how much NBA talent they really have. Like, is Damian Jones a pro? Maybe so. Is Wade Baldwin a pro?
Oh, it was supposed to be Baldwin and Jones are going to elevate this team, and Vanderbilt's back.
But are they first-round talents is my question.
No, neither of them are right now. Jones, he looks terrible every time out there, and mm-hmm. you put him out, it's like, well, what does he do that's really –
He's a shot good. Blocker, and he shoots a high percentage. So there's that.
But as a junior, I think I would expect more. That's
I think when you got that big 7 next to your height, people get excited. That's
you get excited, but I'm like, okay, I'm like, well, you're telling me about him. I was like, okay, you know, keep an eye. I'm like, okay, I'm keeping an eye. I'm like, okay, he's a freshman. He's a junior. I'm like, is he a junior college transfer? No, he's. Okay, has he peaked already?
What about Tyler Davis at Texas A&M? I'm kind of intrigued by him. He reminds me a little bit of another guy that was a one-and-doneer at Tennessee, and that was Tobias Harris. You know, decent rebounder, good defender. He shoots the ball well, always around the ball. He lives on the block. I like him, but I do think he's got at least 3 more years before he can be anything in the NBA.
Yeah, that's the, you know, Texas A&M is one of those, we have a team, we don't have superstars. Mm-hmm. Like I'm watching them, you know, when they did LSU games and a couple other games.
I feel sorry for you.
not this past one, their first in-season one.
Okay.
Where they actually tried a little bit as opposed to just not showing up. They're just another, I don't want to say they're a system team, it's just they haven't developed a style, and okay, we got players who are playing together. There's no superstar on that team.
No, they had so much depth on that roster, I think Billy Kenny was scared to shake it, so he didn't really hand the ball to one guy like Jalen Jones or Daniel House and say, hey, here you go, you're the man. Like, instead, they just kind of tried to, like, try to pass the ball along to everybody, and I think it hurt them in some ways because they don't have a go-to guy sometimes, but... You know, Daniel House as a senior, 6'7" guard. I don't know if he was a transfer from Houston. I don't know if he's a pro. I don't think Jalen Jones is a pro. And I know Alex Caruso is not going to. If Alex Caruso makes it in the NBA, he's going to have to earn it in the D League as like a defensive guard who learns how to shoot like Aaron Kraft did. That's going to have to be what happens.
Or again, you just need to sort of go to the right team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, where, like T.J. McConnell at Philly. T.J. McConnell had, let's be serious, the man had no business playing in an NBA game, let alone starting an NBA game.
Well, exactly. But then again, let's go back a few years to, like, Phil Presley from Missouri. Mm-hmm. Is he that good? No. Then all of a sudden the Celtics get a chance on him, and he's been in the league for 3 years, and he's, you know, he's bounced around to teams, but, you know, he still manages to make the roster at the end.
Yeah.
And it's a lot different than, okay, what about the, look at, not to, I'm not, you know, I like to joke around with Justin a lot, but I'm not shitting on him. Like, Ricky Lito, oh, he's has the stock, he has the pet, you know, he's a big name, and then disappears flat off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Couldn't do anything. So there's something to be said about the players, you know, who managed to stick around versus the flash in the pans.
I think Lito was recruited the same time as Dunn. I mean, how much of a regret does he have? Or he just never had the motivation to go.
I don't
school
think he
and
had
do
the
all
motivation.
That. You know,
lost.
That's the other thing about this, you know, because we, you know, they had the whole issue. Here we go again with Simmons with the academic issues, nullifying him from being able to be voted for the Wooden Award. First of all, who cares? And second of all, I don't think players care enough about academics sometimes to want to go play for their team. They just don't want the hassle that goes with playing basketball because all they're good at is playing basketball. To be
honest. That's the thing is that there's a difference. It's not like the NFL, you know, the college football players, when they don't qualify, that's what they don't really – they're not the smart. But the NBA ones, like, whoa, they didn't qualify. They're dumb. No, they're just – they know, like, education is not for me. I don't want to go to class. I just want to practice my jump shot. So it's just a matter, like you said, of not wanting to do it, not wanting to qualify.
And you know what? And here's and this might be controversial, but you can't fault a guy for feeling that way either. If you don't want to go to school, don't go to school.
Well, look at what was it, Derrick Rose? He had somebody take his SATs for him, mm-hmm. and did you know? Well, he's like, I don't. Education's not important for me. Look at me. I'm, you know, I'm all of a sudden the number one pick. I'm $100 million contract. We're not talking about the injuries here, but that's what a lot of these kids have is, well, I'm the AAU superstar. I'm going to be one and done. I'm going to be the next Kobe Bryant. I'm going to be the next LeBron James because I have to go to school now. Oh, so I got to get my, you know, I think it's a little better that they have this. They have to go to school for 1 year because they're you know, they're getting their grades so they could qualify.
It gives them an institutional type of policy to follow.
Yeah,
or organizational policy where you and then in the NBA, that's what you got to do. You know?
Yeah, imagine all the high school kids coming out if they didn't have this. You have to go to school for 1 year.
We saw it. We saw it, and it was a nightmare for the teams that weren't good.
It was sort of a nightmare, but I'm saying how bad it would be now if you're seeing 10, 12 freshmen coming out every year. They would have all been high school kids.
I think NBA teams now are so good at incorporating specific talents to their strengths that I think high school to pro talents would fit in easier. I really do.
I don't know.
But I don't know emotionally if they would be able to fit in easier.
There's a difference between emotionally and people want, like you see it every year, almost every week they say, like, you talk about what do they want? You want kids who can play D and have a high IQ. You don't hear anybody coming out of high school who plays D. You don't hear anyone like, oh, he has a high IQ. That's what you develop in college when you're playing people who are better than you and you're playing against the kid who's going to be. Well,
and I think that was a misconception about Ben Simmons. He has such a high IQ. He can pass. It's like, no, that's not player IQ. Figuring out how to beat the guy that's up against you every night, that's a high player IQ.
Yeah, you know, being at the right place. And, you know, Simmons is a high IQ because you don't get double doubles, triple doubles on a team that just doesn't do anything and the rest of the team's not trying. He can put, you know, you watch him just put in less effort every week.
Okay.
Remember the beginning of the season, he's just destroying it right now. It's just like, okay, I know where, I see this team's not going to do anything.
Let's do the checklist with Kentucky. Jamal Murray.
Star.
Tyler Ulis.
He is the polarizing figure on the team.
But he's the leader. He's the guy. He's the main man.
He's the leader. Some team is going to take him.
You mean polarizing in terms of scouts?
Yes.
Okay.
He's the one. Well, he's 5'9", and he's going to have to overcome that. He's like, you know, Isaiah Thomas, last pick of the draft. You had, you know, it's fun. Just go back to the draft and watch all the foreign guys taken before him and all the busts. And it's just, well, you need to, you know, you see Nate Robinson. Okay, he played. He's going to play and he's going to score. But again, if you're just sort of buried on the wrong team, you're out as quick as you were in.
Scott LeBissiere.
He is going to make
This one's weird. I don't even know how to predict this one because if he plays great in the tournament, all of a sudden, back to the top of the five, you know?
He's already still in the lottery. He's already 10 to 14 and
He's got a little. He had a little mid-range jump shot going on, you know, in the last couple of weeks of the season, you know, and he can block shots. Well, I can't take that away.
Some team is going to take him. Some team, if you know.
And he's so skinny, dude.
It just depends on the team that takes him. If you're a team that has a D-League team and you're just going to say, I am going to leave him there all year, you know, do the Caboclo thing. Like, we, you know, Toronto bought a franchise literally just to train that kid. Mm-hmm. So if we just say we keep him there all year, we develop him, we get him stronger, yeah, you're going to develop somebody who has a cheap contract. But if you're... As we said, but again, as you see with Toronto, you have two developmental players in Najera and Caboclo, and then they couldn't get roster guys because, well, where you tied up the end of the bench with these two guys down the D League.
Here's a guy I love. Now, I don't know if he'll go to the NBA yet, but if he comes back another year, I think he'll be really fun to watch. Isaiah Briscoe.
He's probably gone.
He's a nice defensive player, and he does passes because he's from New York. He's a point guard out of New York, and he does passes that just like boggle your mind. He's a horrible free throw shooter. You know, he lacks in fundamentals for sure.
Oh yeah, and he.
And then there's Poitras.
Poitras, you like?
Well, it's weird. He's the guy that never left. You know, he just stuck around, but the knee injury really, really hurt him. Really hurt him. But there are days where scoring wise he explodes. So he's, you know, he's the last thing I would ever call Alex Poitras is consistent. Let's kind of round off with some of these mid-major players. What about Kyle Wilcher and Domantas Sabonis at Gonzaga?
Sabonis is the only one because he has the size and he has the three.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you know, the Sabonis has been, he hasn't, this was supposed to be a year his comeback, and he's supposed to start dominating. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I've been seeing his name on the board is because, again, of the weak lot of the weak system, but he hasn't shown really much.
I didn't include the American because I think that conference is still a step below some of the power conferences. But the main NBA kind of avenue for the American is UConn. What do you see here with maybe the only one I see here is Daniel Hamilton, and that's a reach. He might just go back to school.
He should go back to school. The American, as you can see, they're starting some things, mm-hmm. and the split sort of, you know, divided the.
Yeah.
The, watching the two conferences, their style of play is now completely separated.
Yeah, Cincinnati is not there's no pros. That is all just like nasty, rugged college players. Like there's just no pros. The only pro I remember coming out of Mick Cronin's system in the last 7 years was Sean Kilpatrick. And Sean Kilpatrick had to work his way into the league. So that's a stretch. SMU was a good team, but I don't know if they had any pros on their team. Nick Morris too short. Marcus Kennedy, I don't see it. Temple never has pros. The last pro I saw out of that squad was LaVoy Allen?
Yeah.
Maybe? You know? I'll say this one. Jameel Warney at Stony Brook.
Oh, what is it? Christmas.
Which one is it? Oh, Deontay Christmas. Yeah, but he came before LaVoy Allen.
You just said Temple and...
Yeah, yeah.
I got a name just, right.
You got to name somebody. Yeah. Jameel Warney at Stony Brook, awesome player, double-double machine. He had a 43-point game in the America East Final where they were down big to Vermont, and he took over the game. That is the sign for me, Adam, of a great player. Not just necessarily high major or low major, just a great player in general.
So you're saying he's the next CJ McCollum?
Well, he's a big man.
I meant small school.
Like a guy that might stay. Well, you got to win that.
I know he's not. You mean he's not a point guard?
You're also asking me, is he the upset special in the NCAA tournament?
Yes.
You know, and depending on the seeding, maybe. The other guy that I would keep an eye on is Jeremy Senglin, the guard out of Weber State. He's really, really good three-point shooter, and he's a junior. I like him a lot. He plays with another guy who's on people's draft boards, a big guy named Joel Bolomboy, who's like a double-double guy. So Weber State's got a little bit of talent. Remember, Damian Lillard went there. So
yep.
they got a little bit of a – they got a little bit of punch there. Outside of that, Monmouth, everybody talked about their bench and all the hijinks. I don't know if they really had any NBA talent. Justin Robinson was their best player, but he's 5'8". Like, I just don't see that there.
It's not a time for – I don't see – the small schools don't have that star player.
Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet, who everybody knows out of Wichita State, will either of them make the NBA?
No, they're nothing.
I think Baker has a chance because he's 6'4".
He has a chance, but like I thought Klay Anthony Early was the best bet from Wichita State, and it's just like, okay, they're sort of the, you know, the big fish, little pond. We're better than the rest of the Missouri Valley.
What about Chris Horton out of Austin Peay? They pulled the upset on Belmont. He averages 18 points and 12 rebounds.
Nothing. They're just, you know, we'll see you in the Polish leagues, and you're just going to be another, oh, you know, what team is the, where is he? Oh, he's in the Serbian league now. He was the small school star. And no, like I said, I don't see NBA potential on these small, this seems to be the 1 year. You always could pick one or two names out. Like, you know, you said Cameron Payne last year from Murray State, which was obvious.
You know what team's got, what conference has sneaky talent? The Atlantic 10. Now, you know about this because this is your neck of the woods, because Rhode Island, your roadies are in the A-10.
Yeah, they always, but again,
you got Melvin Johnson at VCU. You've got DeAndre Bisley at St. Joseph's. You've got Marcus Posley and Jalen Adams, small guards, out of St. Bonaventure. I don't know if they're NBA players. I think DeAndre Bembry is going to wind up in the NBA because of his frame and the way that he can rebound and dish the ball. But I'm not sure about the other ones. But I'm going to tell you, I think the A-10 is going to fare well in this tournament this year.
They always, you know, they
get to the second round and they get bounced usually. Usually for the A-10, they get to the second round and they're gone.
Yeah, because they always come in as the 7 or 8 seed and, okay, that's good. Oh, yeah, the 8 seed. Oh, well, yeah, you get destroyed by the 1.
Yeah, yeah.
They never get the favorable seedings.
At the end of the day, what was the storyline for college basketball for in your eyes?
Big step back.
What,
this
what,
year
the
was
30
just
second,
a lot of
from the
mediocre.
30-second shot clock or the shot clock or
that's a, you know, we always spin up the play. Well, how come scoring hasn't gone through the roof? How come you're still averaging 60 instead? Oh, it's because players are just still making bad shots and
coaches are very uncreative.
Coaching. I can say okay. The storyline for me, coaching seems to have disappeared.
Even with the higher-level guys like the Roy
Williams. Where there's no longer trying to develop talent. I got you for 2 to 3 years. You know, again, we had mentioned, you know, way back when you came out as a junior because there was always somebody in front of you. You didn't get that playing time. Now freshmen are picking their schools. Well, I'm going to get 30 minutes. I'm out after 1 year. We've mentioned probably a dozen people who shouldn't come out who probably will. And it's just, well, coaches know, like, oh, I'm not going to develop you. I need to now recruit your replacement.
Well, it was also the year of the senior. You know, you had people like Buddy Hield, Denzel Valentine, Jared Uthoff at Iowa, who had transferred originally from Wisconsin. Buddy Hield was another one, if I didn't mention him. Bryce Johnson. They had a lot of really, really good senior players this year. But here's the thing, and I think some people get lost about this. The idea that people stuck around in college and they get this notion that they became the best players they possibly could be. And that's not necessarily true. You know, I've seen senior players go on to the NBA and become even better players. But what does it say that a lot of the best teams are congregated with good to very good senior leaders?
Well, that's the same, you know, that's the coach team, the well-coached teams. That's the ones you see with North Carolina. You see with Michigan State. Strangely Kansas, because they're usually choke artists, but you have these players, you know, they come in, well, you're not as heralded as the Kelly Oubres and the, you know, they're gone. Oh, now you're getting your time. Oh, now you're going to show, oh, you're actually good. Well, because you decide to sit and learn as opposed to, nah, man, I'm one and done.
I'll say this, the seniority did lend to the fact that it gave some more depth to some of these teams because the incoming freshmen for those same teams weren't able to just insert them immediately and say, okay, you're our go-to guy. You know, some teams did that, like Maryland did with Diamond Stone, but then there's some players like Deontay Davis at Michigan State and Caleb Swanigan at Purdue and even at North Carolina, the freshmen, they didn't immediately come in and step up and became the stars of the team. They had to work their way through it, and I feel like by doing that, it made those teams better, but it made also a lot of teams that have glaring weaknesses. I mean, we had more losses in the top 10 this year than we've had in the last 40, like, since, like, it's the most losses out of the top 10 in like 40 years. So I don't know if there's parity, because like you said, the top programs usually win it all or go to the Elite Eight, but I feel like it's going to be very, very hard to predict who's going to win it.
Yeah.
So I have to end that with, who do you think is going to win the national championship?
I want to say Kentucky, because that's the easiest thing to always say, because they really do have the most talent.
They always peak at the end of the year. That's one talent that John Calipari never gets credit for. His teams always play best in the postseason.
But just watching, I think, I don't know, it seems UNC seems to be a step above, just a little more complete at the end and won't choke. And that's really what I think the tournament comes down to, is who's not going to choke, because none of these teams are going to actually win it. I think it's going to come down to these, the other team's going to lose it.
Well, that's the thing, too. And also, because it's wide open, it gives a better opportunity in some people's eyes for Bill Self and Jay Wright to, you know, to redeem themselves and be able to win with teams that aren't as good as previous teams that they had had, but because it's more wide open, the opportunity is there. But it's, in my eyes, I would probably have to go with you, so we're probably going to be in concert here. I think North Carolina's peaking, and I think they're going to win it all.
Okay, nothing. We're taking, obviously, the safe bet.
Yeah,
We're not.
Michigan State is a great pick, too. I mean,
yeah, and you could always say Duke again. And we're not. We do make bold predictions, and once in a while our bold predictions come in, and it's like, yay, but
in the NCAA tournament, where you've had only like 9 different schools win for the last 15 years. Yeah, it's okay to make a safe
pick.
It's okay to make a safe pick. I agree. So, anything before we finish up? We'll probably be back next week for the catch up with the NBA, maybe talk about some March Madness again, huh?
We'll be back. We do have NBA topics, you know, the season has started.
Because we went a little supersized with this one to make up for it. You remember how The Office used to have episodes that were like an hour and hour and 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and they would.
Well, this was a simple episode, and it's college, so I let you have the floor, and I just try to keep up as long as I did.
Well, it's college basketball, I love it, but it's so exciting. It's so exciting, those, like, the championship week, and then, like you said, that first week of the NCAA tournament where you really don't know what's going to happen. You know, then it starts to stabilize and solidify, and you're like, okay, this team's going to beat that team, and that team's going to beat that team. But those first few days, you don't know what you're in for. And Selection Sunday is awesome. Selection Sunday is probably my favorite sports day of the year.
Okay.
Where is it ranked with yours?
I don't really have a favorite sports day.
Like Super Bowl Sunday or the first day of the NBA playoffs or...
I don't. It's always, you know, depends on the
curling or the curling championship opening.
Oh, the major curling championships. Oh, it's high drama with the 80-year-olds running around. We were the youngest people there, probably by 30 years.
Oh, that must be.
You had occasional. You know, there's a group to 20.
Well, you know what the good part about that when you run in the parking lot to your car, you get there the fastest. So you don't.
For me, the best day is usually the Olympics, because usually they're on at obscure times. And it's like, oh, man, it's noon, and I can watch stuff.
Did you watch these conference tournaments? You talk about obscure times. I was literally – I mean, there were, that's the other thing about the NCAA tournament. It's 11 o'clock, and games are – you got to get going.
You got to get – yeah, no, it's, you know? The tournament times is always fun to be like, South Carolina upstate? Like, who were, you know.
But it's fun to watch them because it's their only chance. And then sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you get a Norfolk State or you get a Lehigh where some player goes off and you're like, holy crap, this team's about to lose.
No, it's a fun time to watch because there's always, it's something on, and it's better than just watching SportsCenter or some repeat.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like I was at the casino when the tournament was on. You have literally 8 games going on right in front of you. You don't have to turn your head. You just move your eye an inch. Okay, there's Maryland. Move your eye an inch. Oh, there's Kentucky. And it's just like, yay.
It's the one sporting event where I would highly recommend going outside, maybe to like a wing place or go to a bar and just watch all the television sets. Like going home and watching it, it's not the same experience. It's just not.
No, that's the one you have to get out. You need the multiple.
Yeah, you need to turn the ADD on and like go from place to place.
You know, that's a fun time. Like, I used to go to Vegas and, you know, college basketball Saturday beyond. You just have literally every game is on and they're all on big screens. It's just like, yay.
Do you prefer the fact that they play the entire games on a different network with the blanket of the Turner networks, or did you like it in the old way on CBS and NBC where they had a control center that would flash to all of them, like what NFL Red Zone?
No, I didn't like that because I would always get stuck with like Duke versus the 15 seed. Like, oh, I want to watch this.
Yeah, and you would look at the ticker, and they have this score, and you're like, go to that game, go to that game.
No, and I remember, like, you know, this is, you know, ended on this story. I was, once, like, HD first started, you know, getting prominence in, like, the mid-2000s.
Okay.
It was, you know, I was with my girlfriend at the time, we were watching a game, and it's like, oh, man, you see, I was trying to explain the difference between HD and non-HD because, you know, some people are like, I don't get it. It's all the same to me. I'm like, no, there's a difference. Mm-hmm. And then we switched from CBS to CBS HD, and it was a completely different game. And they didn't put on their ticker, you know, watch HD for this game, watch SD for this game. They just had two separate games on the channels. And I'm like, she's like, oh, well, now I see the difference. Yeah. Huh? I'm like, fuck you. And,
well,
but
you
it's
know,
just like,
you know, Dish is doing that now, I think, with some of these things. And I think they also do that with the Olympics. We'll see it again in Rio in the summer, where they create channels so that you can watch the different things on the blanket coverage.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing with Rio is all the games will be on real time. It's not, you know, tape delayed, which will be good. Yeah.
Well, I love the fact that they had a channel for the Summer Olympics just for the basketball, even though it created a lot of dead air time between, like, you know, the halftime, because there was no announcers, there was no analysts. It was just the live feed. So, but it was fun because you would just literally watch all of these games in the pool play of the Summer Olympics with these teams, and you didn't have to worry about changing the channel. It was heaven.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, Olympics. Let me go watch. What's this? Click. Shot put. Sure, why not? Yo, that's a big dude from Mongolia.
And that's what March Madness is like, too. You don't get the same type of games. You'll have a game that goes, like, 55 to 53 is the final score. Then you'll see a game and the final score is, like, 98 to 90. You know, the styles are so different. That's the one beauty of college basketball.
It's a fun week. Selection Sunday, I really don't care because I don't want to hear if you're the 68th or 69th best team.
I love fantasy booking, I guess you could say, where who might go where. Like, or like after they seed it, who might beat who. That's the fun part.
But it's just like, this team is like, all your teams, if you're the last team that makes it, you're not going to win it. And for me personally, I would rather be on a team that's going to go to the NIT finals as opposed to having to be on the play-in game to get the 12 seed to lose. And
I'll take the play-in game any day of the week because I have a chance. Instead of being Ben Simmons and playing in a shitty NIT game on ESPN.
I would just rather go further in the tournament and win as many as I can as opposed to having to.